And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And welcome into another episode of Turn the Corner, a Detroit Tigers podcast. I'm Kieran Steckley. With me, as always, is a man who puts the guts in Augusta. He is Cody Stavenhagen. How you doing?
Doing good, Kieran. I barely got to watch the Masters. A lot of baseball the past 36 hours or so. You know, this episode, how about I just bore everyone right off the top? Let's start with a little plug. All right, as some of you guys know, getting some stuff off the ground here at Turning the Corner. If you're interested in advertising with Turning the Corner, should have some ads coming up soon. But if you run or involved in a local business, any other sort of business, or are interested in ads, let me know. Also, don't forget to hit up our merch shop. We've got several orders out. You can get the vaunted Turning the Corner koozie. And you can always help support the pod via Venmo at TTC-pod. Now let's talk some baseball.
Yes, and one more little thing to add to that, Cody. The ads that you guys hear, that's not us. So that's just like that's
great point.
That's just the service, yeah. The hosting service that we use or whatever. We see $0.000 from that. So if it feels like, oh, well, they got some ads, no, they don't. So, you know, so we're trying to grow this podcast because we enjoy doing it, and I hope you guys enjoy listening. All right. An understatement, Cody, for this week would be, it was kind of a weird week. So you had, you know, the two-game series. That's always kind of odd to begin a week. And then you have Mother Nature getting in the way of the homestand. You have a doubleheader. The Tigers pull two games straight out of their behind. So I actually kind of wanted to start the podcast this way. Because I think, like, okay, so the Tigers are 5-1, I believe, in one-score games. And that's not including, you know, some of those extra inning blowouts that more or less, both sides of them, more or less, I, you know, kind of consider one-score games in a way, you know. So, I'm curious. Now, you obviously were not in Pittsburgh, but you were there today in the clubhouse. I'm curious, what is a Major League clubhouse like after a game of which basically nothing went well 7/8 of the way through? And then a little knock here, a couple breaks here. All of a sudden, you're winning the game. You know, all of a sudden, you've won the game. Like, what is a clubhouse like when teams kind of, or maybe teams in the past, and specifically this team, because it seems like there's something they're actually comfortable with. Like, what is a clubhouse like after a win like we just saw today?
Yeah, in general, it's definitely louder, definitely more full, more people in there. You know, I think today, like, it was a long weekend for the players, though. You know, you go, you got a game, you have a doubleheader, you wake up, you have another game. Actually, after today's come-from-behind victory, although the music was cranked up to 11, I think a lot of guys were getting out of there. They wanted to see their families. They wanted to go home and chill for a little bit. So, comparatively speaking, it wasn't the most lit clubhouse, you know, I've been in. Normally, honestly, with this young team after a win, it's a pretty fun, pretty vibrant clubhouse. The music's loud. Guys are there joking around, having a good time. Definitely a very distinct, every team I've ever covered, a very distinct attitude, you know, compared to a losing clubhouse, which almost no matter what point in the season you're at or the magnitude of the losses, guys are getting their stuff and getting out of there. It's quiet. No one really wants to talk. If it's, you know, at certain times it can be tense. Winning clubhouse is always a much different vibe for sure.
Now, and again, specific to a game like today, I have to imagine it's an obvious thing to say, but like the manager should be the most grounded person like in the clubhouse on the team and stuff, of course. But I feel like it definitely emphasis on this, like, applies to AJ. He seems to be as grounded a dude as you can be in that position. Even when he's, like, arguing to get ejected, it's not even, like, all that, you know, emoting, like, physically or whatever. It's just, like...
Oh, he's trying to apply logic.
So, he seems like a grounded guy. Like, because the reality of the situation is, not to put a damper on it, is that, like, this is a game that you should not have won. Fair to say. You should not have won.
No.
But you did, and that deserves to be celebrated, while at the same time being like, you know, we were down 3-0, we couldn't hit a lick, you know, we gave up some stuff early in the game. So, like, I feel like AJ's attitude, because you guys are coming in with questions that are mostly positive, because it's like it's a positive day. They won. But AJ's also thinking about all the things, and he knows all this stuff about how they were lucky here or maybe a break here. Like, how does he kind of, like, handle wins like this, especially when he probably has, I'm just guessing here, maybe a somewhat negative glow of the game overall, but they did win, and he's getting pestered with, like, positive questions. Like, how great was it to see this, or how important was this, you know, and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think... You know, AJ is more, there are some managers who aren't, and coaches in other sports that aren't grounded. Like, I've been around some of them. They lose and they're as upset or as on edge as any of the players, if not more. AJ is probably the most grounded of the people I've covered. That said, there's still normally a little more of a glimmer in his eye, a little more color in his quotes when they win. After a loss, he's normally pretty grounded and still gives really good quotes. Every now and then you can see the frustration kind of wear on him, and it's like he just kind of wants to get out of there. Now, the interesting thing is, and in some ways the great thing about baseball, after the Tigers come back and win, the first eight innings of that game, seven and a half innings, didn't really matter. Like, it was kind of out the window. All the post-game questions ended up kind of being about, like, the eighth inning. And because post-game pressers tend to be shorter, win or loss, most people probably don't realize this. What happens a lot is we as the writers and you know, Bally Sports kind of hit on the main points, and then a lot of the more intricate points of the game kind of revisit the next morning. And so, you know, especially in a case like today, I think post-game was like, oh, wasn't it great that Javi got a hit and Twerk battled a bloop single and Mark Canna made a smart play to get to third. And then maybe Monday morning we'll kind of come revisit. Oh, yeah, you know, you guys – and I mean, this was addressed, and AJ did talk about it, but maybe we go a little deeper on why could you guys not hit anything off Ober and some of the other little finer points. Like for example, you know, Saturday I mean, they lost both games, but, like, the Torkelson plays didn't even get brought up, and I asked AJ about that Sunday morning, you know, where should Twerk have gone with the ball. Sometimes you kind of push stuff off the next day when it's a little better and easier to actually analyze.
Very interesting. Little inside baseball there. I like that. We're almost 8 minutes into this thing, and it's a little bit of a disservice, like, because I don't know how often we're going to be able to say this. Javi Baez, hero of the game. You could argue, definitely for the second time. I mean, there were a couple key moments for this one, but got a spark or sparked the offense with that home run. By the way, leg kick. I don't know if anyone picked up on that. That was
so glad you. I made sure to put that in my story. I went back to watch the swing, his home run swing. What was it? Huge leg kick, massive coil, huge bat twitch. Mm. Everything he's not supposed to be doing, but it worked for
and
him.
Also, I only saw this, I only caught it once. I meant to go back and look at it again. I'm pretty sure as he finishes that swing, he's spitting out sunflower seeds, which is just like a...
That'd be very hobby thing.
Which is, it's just an objectively funny thing to observe. Like, I have no, like, opinion on it other than that. However, like... How do you bring up the Javier Baez conversation, like, for the 80 millionth time or whatever? But he was the star, or he was the spark today, and as much as people are calling for his head, metaphorically speaking, like, he's playing, dare I say, Gold Glove caliber defense this year. Maybe it's a slight exaggeration, but I think it's in the ballpark. And if he can get that, because that was the thing about the home run that stood out to me was he recognized the pitch after seeing it for the second time. So he had it. He had it the first time, and then he. It was basically the same. I don't remember what the velo was on the difference, but it's basically the same pitch, same spot. And he recognized it right away, and he got a hold of it. Also, bat speed was not an issue there. I don't know overall whether like what, because that's the thing that you kind of worry about when he's not getting higher contact is the bat speed still there? The twitch as the coil as the things that you just said, and that looked like 2015-16. Javi Baez. Like, there's just that one moment in time, that one swing, it looked like quintessential Javi Baez. And he's a guy that he's going to have to do a lot and probably will never actually kind of win over the fan base. But it's moments like that that you kind of remember, and you kind of hope, like, it's still there. It may not come out all that often, but it is still there. It is something that he is technically capable of at any time, even if it's excruciating other 90% of the time.
Yeah, that was kind of my main take, like doubled up on the sweeper. Also, for as bad as Javi is at chasing sliders in the other batter's box against right-handers, if you're throwing a breaking ball that's kind of moving into his barrel as a left-handed pitcher and you leave that over the plate, you might be asking for some trouble. That's what we got. My second point, I think I just want to talk about, is it okay for home fans to boo their own players? Because that became the topic after the game. Javi probably gave his most honest comments to date on this. You can read that in my story on The Athletic if you want to know more about what he said. It wasn't anything over the top, but basically admitted he doesn't think that helps the team or the organization. And last weekend I was driving home and I was listening to 97.1 and they were talking about this and it was a complete mess of discourse. So we're going to try to do it in a little bit more of a thoughtful manner. I posted a story with these quotes and the first three responses, well, he should stop swinging at sliders so far out of the zone all the damn time. Professional athletes complaining about booze is always a bad look, but it's especially effing bad when you're making $20 and hit $20 million and hitting 125. Tell you what, Javi, you walk once per game, I will stop booing. So, like, this is kind of the world we live in where the negativity is always, in the social media world, what is going to rise to the top. I guess, like, your experiences inform your perspective. I have a different perspective on this probably than a lot of fans, because being around sports, getting to know some of these athletes, seeing what they actually go through, I'm not a proponent of booing your own players or really booing anybody. You know, if you're a fan and you pay for your ticket and you pay for the overpriced beer or whatever, I guess you have the right to do whatever. But I think there is too big a portion of sports fans who take all humanity out of it and forget that these are people we're watching on the field. Javi Baez, as much as he is absolutely an infuriating player, as much as I can't defend his performance on the field, it's not like he's going out there trying to fail. It's not like he doesn't have feelings and a family, and the dude is trying hard. No one is wearing Javi Baez's struggles harder than Javier Baez. It's just kind of like you're booing. Why? Does it make you feel good? Does it, you know, you want to tell this guy how much he sucks? What are we really accomplishing there? So that's my take on it, but I'd be interested to hear yours, Garrett.
Well, this will be a boring segment because I more or less agree with you. If longtime listeners will remember, like I've referenced this before, but when Calvin Johnson was honored at a Lions game, this was the Tucker field goal doink in game. He was honored after being in the Hall of Fame, and you know the Lions had been through some rough stretches. And Martha was there too, but Sheila Ford Hamp was out there, you know, giving the thing, and the fans booed her. And it's like, you're booing a ceremony for one of the greatest players in franchise history. I thought that was very distasteful, just so you had a chance to boo the owner when times were lean. Merle's also not a fan of booing, if you guys can hear that. So I think that, like, sports are an avenue where people feel the right, I guess you could say, to act in ways that they wouldn't in any other aspect of society. Like, you wouldn't really go anywhere else shirtless with something painted on your body. You know, like, you
hey, it's each their own.
Yeah, if people are doing that, send me some examples. I'd love to see it. And I don't find booing to be a productive thing to do, just in general. So everything that, because I watched the video of him in the clubhouse, Javi, that is, everything he said is right. It's 100% right. Now, people are still going to feel the need to boo, and they feel like it's their right, and, you know, this guy is, you know, paid this many millions of dollars. I mean, you and I lived in Oklahoma for several years. This was a constant thing with Russell Westbrook. Still is, by the way. He, you know, every now and then it happens. Like, I don't find it to be a productive thing to do, except when the pitcher does a pickoff attempt. I think that should be booed all the time because I just think it's a funny thing at this point. And Dan Dickerson always points that out, and I like that he does. But is there anything? I try to be productive with everything I do, Cody. Everything I do, I want to have a purpose and make it towards some sort of end of means. Booing, does that do anything? Does Javi, especially from the hometown fans, does Javi hear that and then think, well, I got to try harder now? They're booing me. Like I can't swing at this slider outside now. Like, they're booing me. Like, yeah, I got... No, that's not how it works. So, we're going to be unpopular here because people are... It's like ingrained in sports culture. It's ingrained in sports culture to boo, to, you know, say things about guys' moms and wives and you know, and I'm sure it still happens, but in a different time, say things about, you know, certain orientations and their race and, like, all these things, you know. It's always been, like, this inherent thing that's happening in sports. And we all agree years later, or even in the moment, too, that it's ugly and not good. So then we still kind of do that aspect of it. You know what I mean? So, like, I agree with you 100%. Like, what do you think? Javi's, like, not trying? You think that, like, he doesn't feel like he has no pride?
No.
You think he has no pride? You know what I mean?
You don't think of Javi Baez as a human person. You just think he's this abstract character who plays on a baseball field. You might go a step further. A lot of these people, I'm looking at on my Twitter, a lot of them are old white guys. If Javi Baez were white and he didn't have tattoos and he didn't wear a chain, would you still boo him? Or are you just booing him based on some false perception of who you think he is?
Well, like, take it a step further. If you saw him in person, like I said, you would absolutely not. I forget who kind of coined this phrase, but it's like, they boo me from afar, but if I saw him, they'd want an autograph or something. You know, like,
is that Ali or somebody like that?
Some version of that has kind of been said by several people. And, you know, social media has not been productive for this as well. And, like, but, like, the way I kind of summarize it is like this. Is there any aspect of your job, you know, you being the general person, is there any aspect of your job that if you made a mistake, you, like, feel like it, you would think it was, like, worthy to have 10,000, 20,000, 60,000 people boo you? Is there any aspect of that would make you, like, you would have a nice reaction to or whatever? Or, by the way, if you're saying that, like, again, this is probably upsets some people. If you're saying this stuff on social media with, like, some anonymous, like, account, not taken serious, like lower notch of taken serious, in my opinion. And also, if you say things like Christ follower, and you're, like, and then you're, like, spewing things that, you know, I'm no biblical scholar, but I'm pretty sure Christ would not like, I also take you way less serious. So it's funny, like, we think we attach a lot of things to technology and social media as, like, sort of like the worst aspects of our society. But as we discussed, a lot of this stuff was happening, you know, back when you were just getting scores via the telegraph or whatever. So so that's just it's a part of it in a way that, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say I like it. I don't think it's good. I'm like, I wouldn't, the general notion of booing, I wouldn't like kill somebody for, you know, if you go over the line with comments, I think that's different, but I also don't think it's a good thing. Who could say it was a good thing?
I just wish everyone would take a step back and actually like think about this behavior and why they're doing it. And oftentimes the response you get is like, well, this guy makes $20 million. It's like, yeah, he does. You know, I mean, that doesn't, how does that really impact like how he's treated as a human? I don't know.
I've seen the way people treat waiters and movie ticket, you know, movie theater personnel, or even I'm sure people at, you know, that, you know, at concession stands and all that stuff at every ballpark and stadium in America, and youth sports referees. The fact that Javi makes $20 million has literally zero to do with the fact that they're billing him.
That's a great, I'd love to see the Venn diagram of people who yell at waiters and people who boo Javi Baez, because I bet there's a lot of overlap there. Anyway, we can probably move on from this subject. I think we've said all we got to say, and I'm not, look, Javi Baez, man, his performance is a problem. His contract is bad. It's good that he had a good moment on Sunday. We know what he is as a baseball player. I'm not like changing my opinion on that. I just wish we would alter, you know, we would take some time to think about our behaviors from time to time.
Well, here's a question baseball related about Javi. You think he's going to lead the team in stolen bases at the end of the year?
Now, that's a good baseball question. Because I would like to say Parker Meadows will lead the team in stolen bases. But some people who probably don't do a lot of thinking before their behavior are already calling for the head of Parker Meadows after like 28 at-bats. Parker Meadows really lost to the plate. He's really struggling. I'm just going to tell you, I don't think the Tigers are sending him down anytime soon. If you've ever read a Scott Harris quote in your life, you've probably read the word runway two or three times. Parker could hit almost at this clip for 100, 120 at-bats, I think, before the Tigers would seriously consider taking action. If his bat does come around, I think he probably leads the team in stolen bases. But I don't know. Are we on to a Parker Meadows conversation?
Yeah, we can go there. Because like he is currently, I believe, 2-33 on the season. It's not good.
Not what you're looking for.
He does, however, have 7 walks. So if you're looking for some silver lining for him at the plate, like there's some aspect of why he's in the lineup there. You know, like he is capable of that. And similar to the Javi conversation, he does play Gold Glove caliber defense. We'll talk about defense a little bit later. So there's value in having him in the lineup. However, it's not a coincidence that the past couple days we've seen a left-hander not named Parker Meadows leading off for the Tigers. That's Riley Green, and we'll get maybe to that in a second, but I kind of feel like against right-handers we might see him leading off quite a bit here moving forward. But is Parker Meadows a problem at the plate right now? Yes. I don't know how you look at those numbers and think like it's not, but what's the alternative? Like what, like you just gotta, like, we are so good as sports fans, journalists, people on X, as of identifying A and then failing to see what B could be. So the alternative is you're going to have a lot of Matt Vierling in center field. All right, cool. Like, I think Matt's excellent at his role as presently constructed. You want to bring up Akil Baddoo? I love watching Akil Baddoo play, but he's not the defender anywhere close to Parker Meadows. And or you take him out of the lineup, you start putting Green in center, which the whole point of this is to avoid him in center, who, by the way, he's excelling in the corner, so you wouldn't even want to move him anyway. So yes, I agree, it is painful to watch Parker Meadows. Are we like maybe too kind to him right now, as some people have pointed out? Only in, I would say yes, but only in the sense of like, we're just thinking of it purely from the bigger picture here. So that's my point. And I don't know if you noticed, Tigers typically aren't scoring a lot of runs. So like, you've got to worry about a lot of stuff offensively with this team. Parker Meadows isn't holding the team back per se. you know, and he's still an elite defender in a still vast outfield, and that stuff matters too. That's all. It matters too.
Parker is one of about five guys holding this lineup back on a daily basis. He is struggling as mightily as everyone. I do think it's a major concern, and that's not a new opinion. We talked all offseason saying, why does everyone think it's just a sure thing Parker Meadows is going
to
hit?
First ones to bring it up, I think. It's like, if this doesn't work,
absolutely,
like, it could get ugly.
Right, and I think that is why the Tigers are going to give him significant runway, because a lot of the entire way this roster functions is staked around the play of Parker Meadows. They kind of need this to work where it alters a lot of other aspects of the calculus. And the guy, someone told me, an important person said this offseason, young players in the big leagues can do no right, and prospects in AAA can do no wrong, talking about how social media perceives things. And isn't that the truth? Because everyone's tired of Parker Meadows, and everyone wants J-Hen up. And I will point out, that whole rotating the DH thing around, I feel like the team's getting any value from that right now. I think you're getting value from being able to DH Jake Rogers, or like maybe it helps you get like Mark Canna in the lineup.
I have a take on that, but yeah.
All right, so look, if there's another injury or whatever, I'm all for bringing J-Hen up, seeing what he can do, whatever. I think it'd be false to think he's like the answer. All right, we saw him struggle to hit high-level pitching in spring training. He doesn't have a position. That's kind of a whole other conversation. The thing is, like, thinking Parker Meadows and J-Hen are a one-for-one swap is not necessarily correct, even if the Tigers were to do that in, say, a month. Like, yeah, you're looking at probably a lot of Vierling in center field. Is J-Hen going to be able to hit enough to justify it? I don't know. That gets into a whole other web of complicated discussions. So it's not just like, oh, Parker does bad, get rid of him. J-Hen hits in AAA, bring him up. The people at the top, Scott Harris, AJ Hint, like, there's more that goes into these discussions than that.
You know, it's funny we're talking about them back-to-back because like Javi and Parker, that is, because there are some parallels. Although you believe the ceiling for Parker goes up, and you know, you kind of accept Javi is what he is at this point. But like, it, alternatives to Parker, you got to keep in mind. Everybody's got to keep in mind. Alternatives to Parker include like Zach McKinstry playing center field. Like, that's a thing. Is that how comfortable are you with that? Like, twice in a week, you know, like starting, like it. On the list of possibilities, that's on there. Same thing with him playing shortstop, which he did at the top half of the doubleheader on Saturday, and it ended up not costing him really, you know, anything overall. But like, he had a guy out, Carson Kelly, I believe. No, it was Jake Rogers. I think Jake Rogers started the first half of the doubleheader, right? It all runs together. Whoever it was behind the plate had this runner beat. And McKinstry just had a slow tag.
It was Carson.
Okay, I'm sorry. He had a slow tag, and I would bet my mortgage that Javier Baez makes that tag. I would bet my mortgage on it. You know?
No, me too.
And so, like, these kind of things play in. That's all I'm saying. That, like, people who are upset about how Javi has played these past couple years and how Parker is right now, it's not that we're saying you're wrong. So sometimes it's like when you give any sort of pushback, it's like you're wrong. It's not necessarily that you're wrong per se. The numbers are the numbers. It's that like all these other things, I'll speak for myself here, all these other things kind of I take into consideration. And somebody was like, what, you know, asked us on Twitter. And I was like, well, look, I didn't expect him to go 2-for-33. But I like some offensive struggle was baked into the cake in my mindset coming in. So I'm not like outrage by it as it's happening right now. And again, there's only so many guys on the roster. There's only so many guys you can have in the minors that you have evaluated as being like any sort of productive player. Like, this soon into the season, you have to let things play out. You just do. You just have to let things play out, especially when there are no other options. But I will say, I on the J-Hen thing real quick, I think I've reached my emotional capacity for Jake Rogers DHs. Like, you know, nothing against Jake, but it's just like you see that on the lineup card, and you're like, you know,
yeah, this really.
Like, I, to be honest, I'd rather put, because this is a lefty thing, so like presumably like Carey's not on the. I'd rather have Carey against a lefty than Jake Rogers as a DH. I just would. And partially that's me not caring as much about lefty righty that's been established. But like I'm pretty through on that. And I think it's as much as like a lineup in April could be a quote unquote bad look for how the team is constructed. I think that's about, you know what I mean? That just is not as serious. And I like Jake. And come on.
I'm with you. I'll even feed the social media outrage a little bit. Yeah, Jake Rogers doesn't need to be your designated hitter. All right, that just doesn't need to be a thing. And I get why Kerry Carpenter does not start every day against a left-handed pitcher. I'm not saying he should start every time against a lefty, but I think the guy needs some more left-handed at-bats. All right, his track record, I think he's like a 220 hitter and 90-ish career at-bats against lefties. That's a pretty small sample. I want to see a little bit more of what this guy can do against lefties, because if you look at all the numbers, Kerry Carpenter has had a better beginning to his big league career than Spencer Torkelson by far. Really, by far. And also Riley Green. Now, part of that is he's in an advantage matchup in the majority of his plate appearances. That probably helps explain why his career OPS plus is like 121. But let's see what he can do against lefties, because this guy might just be the best hitter out of the three of them. He's definitely been a better hitter against Torkelson, and we're not platooning Torkelson against right-handers anytime soon.
Yeah, at a certain point, I'm just going for upside, and he's just a better hitter than Jake Rogers. So for the designated hitter, I want to put the better hitter. And the problem is, especially this year so far, is that like you're kind of making these lineups with the knowledge that you're gonna like pinch hit and do all these substitutions and all that stuff. But when the team's not hitting as a whole, these starters are going longer, so the lesser hitter is in more at bats than you would like, obviously. So we feel some social media fire there after criticizing it. All right, well, I laugh at myself all the time, Cody, doing this pod with you, because, like, you know, on a day like today, like, people sometimes, like, you put on video, on socials, like, me kind of power ranking the pitchers, right? And everyone was like, oh, it's, you know, sort of, like, kind of miss the mark, where it's like it's a gut feel, it's just kind of how I feel one to two starts in. Like, I'm not saying it's perfect, I admitted it was probably wrong, and you put it best, like, you know, it's absence of context, like that was the whole point. It's just like, it's just how I feel, you know. And I think I both lean into and lean away from being prisoner of the moment, you know. I think that's kind of why one of the fun things about doing a weekly podcast is that you're both kind of just reeling from what happened that day, and also kind of looking back and having like a clearer mind from, you know, games that happened prior. So let me lean into being prisoner of the moment here for a second. I really do think those last two at-bats for Spencer Torkelson were kind of big. How do I say this without making it sound like I'm overreacting? But I still believe in his talent, so I want to make that clear. I also share the concerns that have been put out there by many smart people, many of whom that are smarter than I, about like his pop-up rate and his lack of barrels. And to me today, especially, leading up to those last, I just thought he just, you know, he's not seeing the ball, you know what I mean? Like all these things that like could be part of it. And I thought getting like smoking one, you know, to the wall, even though it wasn't a home run, was important for his confidence. And then doing just enough with the infield in to get the go-ahead run, the game-winning run, was key as well, because that was, like, good hitting. You can say it's like a fluke, it's a little pop-up, blah, 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 but that's what the situation called for. It wasn't like he made that approach purposefully, if that makes sense. You know, because he had had some, like, RBI singles that were just kind of dribblers that, like, kind of fell whole, which, by the way, those things happen today, too. But I just thought it was important, because one of my fears with Torque is he's been an acclaimed baseball player for a long time, basically since his freshman year of college at Arizona State. So he's, you know, breaks Barry Bonds' freshman home run record. He's eventually the number one overall pick, blah, 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 goes up through the minors, into the majors, and struggles. And I think we could say with some confidence that 2 years ago and up into, like, I'm not sure what the line of demarcation was for him last year, but up until that point, you worried about the mental aspect of Torque at the plate. And, you know, some of this bled into defense as well. I was afraid that you could like fall into that again, because the claim is such that, oh, he's the originator of the pizza celebration, and he hasn't hit a home run yet. Ha ha ha. You know, he's going on MLB Network with Riley Green, and they're talking about the finer aspects of hitting with a guy who's batting 200. You know, like all these kind of things. So I was worried about, like, confidence with him. And so I think those two moments where you have just a straight, clean piece of hitting, and then a game-winning hit that you did just enough. You did exactly what the situation called for. I think those are big. I think those are big for Torque, given the struggles. And, you know, people forget, this guy was sent down at one point. No, 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 pick was sent down, you know? And correct me if I'm wrong here on my memory, he was in Toledo when I think Carpenter got called up for the first time. Somebody got called up for the first time, and he's, like, in the video of the guy celebrating. I don't remember if it was Carpenter or not. But so, like, it's been an uneven time for him, and I do think those are two big at-bats for Torque, given the context of which I laid out, even though they're just two at-bats in a very long season. I just can't help but think, like, that is key, because he did it in multiple ways.
I think it might have been big for him mentally, because he was struggling and his approach was bad, and he was getting beat up. Baseball wise, I'll talk like an executive. Like, let's look at process over the results. The double he smoked. Glad he smoked it. Glad he got around on a fastball. It was a 90 mile an hour fastball, kind of hanging up there. It was not a good pitch. He should have belted it. And then, I don't know, two-strike approach, flicked a sweeper that was way out of the zone. He's been getting pounded down and away because he's coming off everything, but yet he's late on the fastball, so he's been really in between. The cause of his struggles for most of his big league career, when he's been struggling, has simply been timing. You know, why is the guy not getting his foot down in the barrel through the zone and getting around on the fastball? I don't know. It sounds simple. It's not simple when you're in the box. There's no way it is. But we've seen, and we saw a good bit the second half of last year, how good Torque can be when he is on time, when he is squaring up the fastball. The ball just starts leaving the yard easy. The results change. Now, the things we all wanted to see from Torque this year is kind of like, okay, the power is there. That's a given. Can he hit for more average? Can he go on base? What does concern me is kind of the reoccurrence of these old problems, just the lack of timing. I don't know that it's really a swing flaw. Is it mental? It's hard to say, and has been with Torkelson since he made his big league debut. That's what's puzzling and almost most concerning. Like, why does the timing ebb and flow so much? And then in the field, like, I've said it many a time, I don't know, because he's a better athlete than most first basemen. We can talk about his plays from Saturday if you want. Two athletic plays that not every first baseman can even do. He just kind of made the wrong baseball decision, at least in my opinion. And that's become the thing with Torkelson's, like, that feel, that baseball player feel, doesn't always seem to be there.
I don't know if this is anecdotal or not, but it it feels to me that he's getting pitched. I don't even like how I'm saying it, but it's just kind of like a gut react. It feels like he's getting pitched harder. Does that make sense? Like he's getting pitched. He's getting pitched harder, like with more purpose. I don't know if it's because
Craig Monroe said that on the radio today. He said, "Hey, you become the guy in the order. You're hitting in the middle of the order. You're getting more attention.
There's more data on you." Because sometimes, like, you know, you face so many pitches, you have so many at bats. Like he's there every day, so like you pick something here, and it makes you think this, and you pick something here, it makes you think that. But it feels like it doesn't necessarily feel like he's getting that many great pitches to hit. Like he is, but like you know what I mean? It just feels like he's, and sometimes he's probably just like I gotta try to do something here when maybe he should be more patient. Like that's why I mean like the mental aspect is that like I don't think he's getting that many great. I think he's getting pitched more carefully. Maybe that's a good way to put it because he isn't.
I think the pitching has been tougher. I also think they're just attacking his weaknesses repeatedly because he's not really adjusting, and he's known as a hitter who's supposed to cover the whole plate. He's not covering the whole plate. He's not covering down and away at all right now. The last four or so games, I've really looked at each pitch Torkelson has seen, trying to kind of figure this out in my own mind. And there has been some mistakes that he's not punished, mostly fastballs, because he's late. And it reminds me, I've probably told this anecdote at some point last year, there is a scout out there that basically has a notebook or a page where they're charting pitches, and Torkelson's at bats, there are a lot of question marks. Where a fastball would be in the strike zone, the scout wrote a question mark, basically to indicate why is he not driving this pitch. I don't have the answer. Something else Craig Monroe said on the radio, like, you know, all these things we point to as swing flaws, you're dipping, you're spinning, those are a symptom, and the root cause is usually timing. And I think it's as simple as that with Torkelson. Now, how to fix it? You got people who know a lot more about hitting than me trying to help him with that one.
It was nice when the Twins made the pitching change in the I think it was when Jackson came in. Jackson, is that his name?
Griffin Jacks.
Jacks. You finally saw a member of the hitting staff like actually kind of working with the, you know, it was Canna and Tor because they were coming up or whatever. So it was like, oh my God, they exist. They exist, like, you know, it's not just names on a website or whatever, because obviously there's no mound visit for a hitter, right? So you don't necessarily see these guys all that often. So I was like, oh, look, it happened. They have notes and stuff. Like, it's amazing. I just hadn't seen that, you know, from them before. but, you know, the weird thing is about this team is there's a lot of criticism for Torque. Yeah, like I said, numbers are numbers. Like justifiably so in a lot of cases. You know, he leads the team in hits.
I didn't
and
know
doubles.
That.
He leads the team in hits and doubles. And does anyone feel like that? Like just in terms of what you're seeing, not like overall player profile, prospect, you know, whatever. It's like, does anyone like feel great about how he's doing at the plate? Obviously not.
But not a great indictment of the rest of your ball club, unfortunately.
So I don't know what that means. I'm just telling you that he leads the team in hits, and people talk about him as like with high levels of concern. And that's not a criticism of that notion at all. It's just that leads the team in hits. People are really upset with how he's doing. So you guys can interpret it that way as well. Which actually, it kind of leads into a little bit of like some repetitive nature. So before we, you know, came on, I was like, you know, how was your day? You know, blah, blah, blah. He's a lot of baseball in these past, you know, this weekend. And I asked, like, jokingly, I was like, did you have to rewrite your story? Because, you know, this rally in the eighth, and all of a sudden Foley's up there with the lead, you know? And so, like, I had to do the same with, like, the pod topics. And I will repeat myself, as I've said last week and, you know, basically so far this season, is that, like, the Tigers as constructed are doing things that you like. So I asked earlier about, like, is it, like, an actual character trait to, you know, win these close games? You had the Tigers season has gone according to plan, really, that so far. It's very, very early. But you have the ability to have great starting pitching. And you don't always obviously get it, but you get good starting pitching basically every day. That's what you wanted. You have a lot of relievers that you believe in, and you have some options in the bullpen as well in certain situations to bring guys out and that you like or whatever. And the AJ said this post games, like, we brought in Will Vest for the ground ball double play, and they got the ground ball. Didn't get the double play because Colt didn't have the transfer, which, by the way, that's my one concern. Defensively, he's exceeded my expectations, but as I said last week or the week before, the hands are really the only thing that kind of, like, worry me a little bit. But
back in my day, we went up to turn the double play with two hands, not to catch the ball, to make the transfer quicker and easier. I don't know. I got to give it to Colt's been really good on defense, man. Yeah, I said last week I wasn't ready to call him above average, and I still don't know if I am, because I think that's like a big proclamation if you actually think about it. But I tip my cap to the kid, and I talked to Colt about a lot of this. And here's the thing: it wasn't that those who thought he was a poor defender were wrong. Colt Keith pretty much tell you he was not a good defender a couple years ago. So this dude's gone out and just worked and gotten better. And, like, gotta respect that.
Yeah, so he's part of a great, and whether he's good or not, as I said previously, he's part of a great defensive unit. So you have good to, you know, potentially really good to great, even though I don't think Scooble has had his A stuff, you know, these last couple of outings. But, you know, you're still good with it. Good to great, potentially, starting pitching. You have good matchup options in the bullpen with a guy that is at the back end that maybe they're using a little bit too much right now with all these close games, but regardless, you're also scoring first more than you think. 9 games this year, Cody, the Tigers have scored first. And so
that's interesting.
Now, the win percentage on those isn't like, it's too soon to have, like, a huge, like, relationship aspect to that, but they are doing it. Now, it might just be one run, and then that's all you get, even though you're in a key situation, but it still technically counts as scoring first. So you're attacking better at the plate a little bit. You're pitching well. You're playing great defense. This is kind of exactly what I thought the team would be at this point, with some aggressiveness on the base pass. So that's a long way of saying a question that I'll pose to you. The Tigers are 9-6. Why? Why are they 9-6?
Yeah, I think we should make this a bit, going back to my experience on foul territory. Are the Tigers good? We just ask this question every week, and that can take up the whole pot. Are they good or are they terrible? Like, I don't know. They can't hit, man. Their lineup's pretty bad some days. But as we talked about last week, that's kind of by design. Kind of what you just hinted at. Scott Harris said we want to keep the pitching close and play good defense, and that's why they're 9-6, because they rank toward the top of the league in defensive metrics right now. If you had to ask me why are they 9-6, I would say mostly the bullpen and some timely hits. They could easily be 8-7. Today's win was brought to you by Willie Castro playing shortstop.
which, by the way, it had to happen. They could not have a majority of a series where he's playing shortstop. Like, God bless Willie, but where he's playing shortstop and not benefit the Tigers. It had to happen. So,
did I feel a little bit validated there in that moment? Yes, I did.
I'm sorry to cut you off there, but it had to happen.
Willie's a nice guy, and he works hard, and he's a great person. But, man, gosh, it's a glove work. I don't care where he's at in the field. All right. So, like, I think it's a mix of a really good bullpen and a little bit of good fortune. You know, we talked about the resiliency thing last week. Is that real? Is that not? Like, it's better to I will say, like, bad teams, there are bad teams that usually look at you like, oh, these guys aren't resilient. Like, they're checked out. I think that's a real thing. I absolutely, like, you know, in April, though, to say like, oh, this team has more fight or competitive character than another team, I think that's hard to say, hard to quantify. Because again, they could and should have lost today's game. And also Saturday, game one, they imploded an extra inning. Yes. And yes. Came out in game two, and it was kind of like, sure seemed to me like they were carrying that game over, you know, from a mental standpoint, and carried it over through eight innings Sunday. That's kind of why I don't believe in that, because sometimes you get momentum, and sometimes you have energy, and sometimes you don't, and that's just how sports, I think baseball, probably more so than certainly football, maybe even basketball, that's just kind of how it works. There's so much random stuff that happens in a baseball game. Tigers were a beneficiary of some of it Sunday.
All right. Let me, before we get into some other Tigers specific topics, I don't want to forget this. I just want to clear the lane for you, Cody. So you brought up Willy Castro and errors. Technically not, at least today. Can we give you, I just want to put you on your soapbox about what is a hit, what is an error. Everything's a hit, it seems like, and today was pretty egregious from a scoring perspective.
The decline of Western society might be marked by how few errors are scored these days. And this is not just anecdotal. I think one of the great things in baseball is you can check almost everything. You better know what you're saying, because there's a way to look it up. Last year, the fewest amount of errors per game in the history of Major League Baseball, the highest fielding percentage in the history of Major League Baseball, after that, 2022, there are fewer errors being scored. It's just a fact. The Athletic did a big story I was involved with last year. I tweeted that out Sunday. If you want to go read it, I can't even begin to summarize the whole thing. Major League Baseball denies that there's any sort of edict to basically score more hits to inflate offense. But I certainly think that might be part of the problem. The pitch clock kind of gives scorers less time to make a decision in the moment. Now, players can go back and appeal, and I would not be shocked if I'm Griffin Jacks and these plays are affecting my ERA. I'm asking for a scoring change. The scoring change process can take a long time. It's reviewed by a committee. When a decision gets changed, it kind of happens quietly. It's kind of like, hey, don't notice. I just think we've lost all standards, man. What are we doing? The Willie one, it was hit right at him. It took one bounce. It wasn't even hit all that hard. The expected batting average is like 160, 180. And even more egregious than that was the play at third. The Mark Canha ball that goes down as a double. Not a single,
A double. I got that notification. The expected batting average was
0.060. It was a chopper to third. Mark Canha gets credited with a double. The third baseman just misplayed it, played himself into bad op, and missed it. How is that not an error? Where are we at in society?
Beautiful. I approve. It's tough. And God bless Dan Dickerson for just being like, you can't score that a hit. And they do. And they do all the time. Like, It's actually insane. You could have talked me into that being a single for Canha. Like, I would disagree with it, but you could, like, eventually I would probably relent. There's no way that's a double. There's just no way. So, all right. Anyway, let's give some flowers to one Jack Flaherty today, because I think if there was
Jack, you made like Flaherty.
Ooh, I like that. If there was, like, you know, three stars of the game, five stars, he would have to be, like, on that consideration, because this is why I love, like, you know, good luck, bad luck stuff. He was kind of on the beginning of the game was lucky in a way for the Twins up to the Vasquez home run, because it's not like he was getting pounded or whatever, you know what I mean? And then, you know, the pitch count's really high. You're thinking, like, man, they just had a doubleheader yesterday. Like, what? Like, who's even, like, good to go? I don't mean available. I mean good to go. You know what I mean? And he sped through the middle portion of that game and got into the seventh inning. He ends up 6 1/3. He gives up 6 hits to 3 runs. 8 Ks. And I think he walked 2. Mm-hmm. I was impressed by his resolve today. I'll say that. I was impressed by his resolve because there's a million scenarios. I've seen it a lot with this team the past couple of years where that guy's not getting out of the fourth inning. You know what I mean? Like, that's just reality. So your kind of take on Flaherty so far, as we've talked about, not the most popular of signing and definitely a little bit of a reclamation project that the team put on, but he's interesting with his approach, especially today, and I don't know what scouting reports are and how game plans are. I look at things that I can see, and resolve was the thing that really impressed me.
Yeah, you know, when the Tigers signed Jack Flaherty, the thought did enter my mind, like, this guy's kind of like a right-handed Matthew Boyd, which I'm not sure is great. And there was one well-known pundit on Tigers Twitter who made that comparison after, I think, the second inning today. And that's kind of what it seemed like, right? A lot of nibbling, a lot of you're getting behind in counts, and then the pitch count starts adding up, and you're not necessarily pitching poorly, but a couple singles find some grass, and then next thing you know, you're in some trouble, and maybe you're a 2 or 3 run homer away from your day being done. It's like, all right, where's that nasty Jack that we saw in spring? And I'm really trying to be objective because it is a signing I didn't fully get at the time. Now, I've come to enjoy covering Jack. I find him more candid and more thoughtful than I even expected. Smart guy for sure. And then you got to be pretty impressed with what he did in innings 3, 4, 5, and 6. He kind of came out and looked like a different pitcher. He said afterward he just got his body moving better, so something mechanically changed. Suddenly he's getting ahead 0-1 repeatedly. The fastball velocity ticks up. He's at 93, 94. Next thing you know, he's 96.9. And he's able to use that slider as a finishing pitch a little bit. He stepped up, man, saved the bullpen, kept his team in the game while his offense was doing nothing. He gave him enough of a chance, and they eventually did mount the comeback. Like, we need to see that Jack out of the gate next time. You know, you want to see that for the whole start. But what was almost like a start that could really leave a bad taste in your mouth, you come away being like, oh, that's a dang good out.
So I had this thought during the game. Now, admittedly, this was when he was, letting some runs through. So, again, admitted. At that time, prison of the moment stuff. But I actually think it kind of applies after the way the game finished out. Is Jack Flaherty Matt Manning with a track record?
There's some of that there. There's a little bit of that there.
Like, it's like, because I think for both guys, you see impressive physical specimens, number one. Number two, if you were to do cut-ups of pretty much every outing, you'd be like, God dang! Like, look at this guy, you know? It's like, look at the movement on this one. Look at the velocity here. Look at, the pinpoint location. And then, like, the pitch that's off is pretty off. Like, a lot of the time. And he's... I'm not trying to compare them specifically in the nitty gritty of pitchers or whatever, but again, that's just kind of how I feel, where it's like you feel impressive, but then there's going to be games that you're like, that was a 5-run outing there, even though I felt really good. I feel like the majority of the time he was on the mound, but it just, didn't work out. You know what I mean? So I was like, is he Matt? You don't need to call up Matt Manning. You have Matt Manning with a track record on your staff already. So,
all right, here's one. Pitcher power rankings. Add Matt Manning to the mix. Where are you ranking Matt Manning this week?
I'll put Flaherty ahead of him. I'll put Flaherty, prisoner of the moment. I'll put Flaherty ahead of him. And I'm not going to move off too much other than that. But I'll put Flaherty ahead of him. I'm certainly not moving Maeda from the last spot.
Maeda was all right. I thought Maeda was pretty solid the last outing.
Well, I just have a throw to center field in my mind that I just can't get over. Maybe that's unfair. Yeah,
the worst pitch of the day was a throw to center field. I gotta tell you, Matt Manning, the final box score ended up blemish a little bit with the two homers he gave up. I think that was the best I've seen Matt Manning pitch in a major league game, though. The most consistent his slider sweeper I think I've ever seen it. I think it was really good. The fastball's obviously there, plays. I wish we could see that like 96, 97 a little more than we see it, but hey, I like the way Matt Manning's pitching right now. And, you know, I've definitely been critical of his game and his arsenal in the past, and doesn't necessarily change my opinion other than to say the Matt Manning who's been throwing lately is a lot of, it's a different guy than we have seen in the past. We might have some more rain coming this week. We might get another Matt Manning spot start. Tigers might just have a six-man rotation after all. Wouldn't that be funny?
I'll say this about Manning. He is he's the most reliable booty call in Detroit going right now. He's just there when you need him. He's just there when you
clearly
need him.
Clearly, Kieran hasn't been out in Detroit in a while.
he's like when you need something, when you're in a pinch, call Matt Manning, baby. You know.
Yeah, I got no comment. I don't know how to come back from that.
It's all right. I mean, I did love the fact that you're like, you know, I gotta get ready for, you know, this is him saying it, is like, I gotta get ready for the Indianapolis Indians, and
you didn't have to face him. All right, next post game, I was like, is he gonna drop Rochester Red Wings? Is he gonna do it? He didn't. But we still got a little bit of subtle shade. I was asking about the sweeper, and he says, yeah, you know, I felt really good about the pitch. Could have used it a little differently. Just really need more reps to iron things out with Jake. It's hard when you only get a little bit here, a little bit of there. And it was like, that's funny. I like it.
I love it. And you know, like, not to go unmentioned, is that it's not, like, the easiest position to be in, you know. We're talking about repertoire with catchers, and then he obviously, he's doing work behind the scenes and all that stuff, but you're not making the scheduled start, right? So it's like, you know,
that's not easy, man.
It's a different routine for sure. So, you know, shout out for being able to handle it. Honestly, this whole stuff, not making the team and, you know, coming up twice, like shout out being able to handle it. Real quick, Cody, as we wrap up here, any thoughts on seeing, try to pronounce this correctly, Wenzel Pérez?
Pérez. It was really cool seeing, like, the moment, seeing how emotional Wenzel was getting called up and getting
long
his first
time.
Hit.
Long time. I mean, as a credit, you know.
He's had a journey. Provide some fun moments. Clearly the guy's going out playing hard, like, playing his ass off. Kind of want to root for a guy like that. At the same time, there's a lot of Willy Castro in this one. Switch hitter, failed infielder, suddenly playing the outfield. Can't really make throws. Kind of does a little bit reckless in the outfield sometimes. Kind of known for chasing, like not the best plate discipline. So I can't say I'm bullish on his profile as a baseball player. But I have enjoyed getting to see, like, the human side of Wenzel Pérez, and so I do wish him the best.
It's always great when somebody's journey, you know, reaches, you know, the major leagues or whatever. So, you know, shout out to him for making it happen. Hopefully, Andy Ibañez, seems like, you know, anything that's, like, soft tissue like that, it's not going to be, like, an immediate comeback or whatever. So.
This is Andy Ibañez we're talking about, man. There's nothing that's going to keep Andy Ibañez down. All right. It sounds like he could be back as soon as the next road trip. Surely you saw the AJ Hinch quote. We told him we couldn't hit today. It was like taking a blankie away from a little kid. Andy wants to play baseball, man. I think Andy, it does sound like it was a mild hamstring strain, and it might not be something that costs him like an entire month.
All right. Well, that's
granted, cool. Grain of salt, soft tissue injuries. I don't know. You can aggravate that thing in a heartbeat. So should probably keep that in mind. Especially if you're just like dying to get back in the cage.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, baseball is literally a game of sudden movements, you know, so like that, you know, you got to keep that in perspective. All right, Cody, anything else you want to get into before we get out of here?
I think that's all I've got for now.
All right, well, I want to encourage everybody to follow us on all these socials. You know, that's X, formerly known as Twitter, at Cody Stavenhagen. I'm at Kieran underscore Steckley. Pod page is at Turn Corner Pod. YouTube, Turn the Corner Podcast. Turn the Corner Podcast on TikTok and Instagram. Got content flowing out of all those. And I do want to say real quick, because we talked about some of the ugly stuff on social media earlier. I 99% of the time am just trying to have fun on X. I'm just trying to have fun. Like, I don't, like, get worked up. I don't, like, I'm not trying to, like, put people down. Like, we're talking about a kid's game on a social media website. Let's just have fun. Life is serious enough. You know, let's just have fun. So if I say, most of the time I'm just trying to be funny. I think it's funny or something that is of good time to me. So I don't, sometimes if I say a comment, I think, oh, well, is that like too mean? It's like, I'm just trying to have fun. So it's just a general PSA. Life is way too short to not try to have fun on a social media website talking about a kid's game. So we have a lot of fun doing this. Want to do one last plug. If you want to advertise with us, you can reach out to Cody or myself if you want to leave us a tip, which we got some more. So thank you to everybody for doing that.
Thank you very much. Super generous, you guys.
Very generous, very gracious, Cody and I are. And I want to encourage you also to subscribe to The Athletic. You can read all of Cody's great work throughout this season. So for Cody Stavenhagen, I'm Kieran Steckley. Everybody have a great week.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.